All right, welcome back to the Rock and Roll Ghost Podcast. This week we have SJ Chiro. I'm sorry, we were just talking about the pronunciation and I almost lost it. Remember to like, share, subscribe the video to all your friends, social media, what have you. SJ is the director of the new film East of the Mountain, starring Tom Skerritt and Mira Sorvino. How are you doing today, SJ?
Doing great. How are you doing?
I am doing well. I appreciate that.
Good.
Well, let's talk a little bit about East of the Mountains.
Yeah,
I'd love to. It's an adaptation, correct?
That is correct, yes. The book was written by David Gooderson, same name. It was written 25 years ago. So yeah. This is an updated version of the story.
And how did you come across the book and or the screenplay?
You know, actually, this project started without me. It was something that was important to Tom Skerritt and David Gooderson, and they really wanted to make a film of it. They looked for the right producing partner for years until finally Jane Charles found them. And once she came on board, that train was out of the station.
Yeah.
So the producers called me in to interview me, and I loved the story. So there we go.
Jane Charles, I know that name for some reason. Do you know some of the things she's done off the top of your head?
Off the top of my head, she's done so much, actually. Her last indie film is called Sold. And that was a huge festival darling. You know, it played around everywhere. So maybe that's what. But she's done tons.
Yeah, the name does sound very familiar. So I'm sure it's just that as I get older, I used to walk around with IMDb basically in my head as a young. Wow. You know, I was that obsessed with movies.
You know, yeah, I know people like you. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah. Yeah, I used to know cinematographers, editors, did this, and now it's like, without my phone, I'm useless. So, yeah, I mean, I remember some things, but just I can't remember the minutiae anymore.
Yeah.
But tell me what about the project intrigued you?
You know what's so weird about this project? So it intrigued me. I really like the story. I love the story of this man who. You know, man in his 80s, as we portray him, I think in the book he's in his 70s, but still, who kind of has embraced this concept of rugged individualism and thinks he doesn't need anyone, even in his death. And just the gentle story of him kind of opening up and really transforming in a gentle way.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's so hard to talk about without ruining.
I know.
The magic of it. That's the problem. There are so many things I want to reference. But it's interesting because the beginning of the movie, it's pretty early on. And I'm not really spoiling anything. His wife had passed like a year before.
That's right.
From cancer, and he's basically kind of closed himself off from their daughter. He was a former doctor, that's known as well, and he's just kind of been puttering around since, you know, her passing, and he makes his decision to go on what he tells his daughter is a hunting trip with the dog.
Yeah.
But it becomes pretty evident early on that that's not what his intentions are, and through a series of misfortunes, not comical in any way, but just misfortunes that, you know, just these are the way things go. His decision gets changed dramatically by circumstance and by other people's kindness in a lot of ways too.
Yeah, and it takes time. You know, it's not just something like, wow, that person was nice to me. I'm a different person. You know, it's right. Not that at all. It's a lot of introspection and just experiencing people. And they're not, you know, they're not like these saccharine, like kind of fake nice people. They're just very genuine. He's experiencing very genuine human people, you know, and ultimately it does have an effect on him.
Yeah.
And, you know, how can I say without spoiling? It's so hard.
Yeah. Cause that's what I had mentioned to you in an email. Well, no, I don't know if I mentioned it, but when I watched it, I was like, I'm so glad I didn't read a ton about this beforehand.
Yeah.
But that's, isn't that a catch 22 nowadays that you kind of have to sell what something is in order to bring people into it, which is a real problem. But for me, this is a film on a spiritual path to something like Crazy Heart with Jeff Bridges.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
In a way where if I'm going to give a reference that, you know, that was fairly successful in independent film and Jeff won the Oscar.
Right.
You know, is something that is not evident right at the beginning what's happening, but you like the person you're following, so you continue to follow them and figure out what they're about. You know.
Yeah, you know, this is Tom Skerritt's first leading role. And frankly, I was blown away by that fact. Yeah. And I was like, this cannot be. And I went back on his IMDb, which is long, like he's had such a long storied career.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, and he just knocks this out of the park in such a quiet way. It's not, you know, a big showy scenery tearing, you know, performance. But you can't help but be affected by it. It's so deep and it's so intense.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting about his performance, and is really that it is quiet. It is, you're reading this man. You're reading into what this man is going through by the happenings around him and how he subtly changes. There's nothing showy about the performance. There's nothing big. I know some people aren't maybe attuned to a film like this, and of course that's you know, an issue. Yeah. It's some people would call it too slow, but it's involving. It's a deeply involving film that really by the end really ends up, even a cynical bastard like me, touched me. You know.
That's good to hear.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like the typical schmaltzy stuff that's obvious, you know, that's the, and even the presence of a dog, the use of the dog is not done in a schmaltzy way. It's done very real. And, you know, whenever I see an animal or a child used the right way in a film, not the easy way, you know, it always makes me feel better, you know, especially children, because I don't like children.
Oh. You need to see Lane 1974. That was my.
I do have to see that, actually. Yeah, your other film. I wish I'd been able to check it out. That's not exactly the as far as I could find the easiest film to find.
It should be easy to find.
Really?
It should be around. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'll look harder then. I might have been lazy. I might have been lazy. I'll include a link to it as well, so other people don't have to be quite as incompetent as I am then.
But I really appreciate your comment, because for me also, I can't stand sentimentality. I can't stand that kind of saccharine, you know, and as you said, like this kind of film could fall into that, well, the use of the dog could be really precious and, you know, or, you know, just, I don't know. There are many ways.
It's a handling of the overall tone. Yeah. That it's you're not rushing to get to anywhere. You're not moving things along unwarranted. You're taking your time. You're easing people in. It really, in a different director's hands, it's a completely different film. Quite honestly, you know, any number of people could take a different number, you know, different stance on this film, make it bigger. I mean, hell, you could spend more time in the mountains, for God's sake, probably, and it become like The Revenant, you know.
Right. You know, it's so funny that you say that, because I studied The Revenant for this film, you know. I mean, because I knew that we were going to be outside and dealing with the elements a lot, you know.
Yeah. That and The Gray are probably my two favorite wilderness films, I think. The Revenant is a particularly interesting one because I had not liked that man's other films. In fact,
I
I always say it, if I have a very, like, I have very strong reactions against, like, Babel and Birdman. I have a very strong negative reaction against Wolf of Wall Street. But these are all very, I realize that they're all very top-notch directors. So while I may not like those films,
yeah,
I like the fact that they invoked a passion in me to not like it as well. Because I can tell something's going on. I just personally don't connect to it, you know? So, but The Revenant, on the other hand, I was like, I'm not going to go see this in the movie. I didn't like the other guy's movies. And I caught it on video.
That's
and
so funny.
I was like, damn it, I should have caught it in the theater because it is brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, a film like that in the theater is the best. I mean, it's just so enormous and the landscape is so enormous. And I have to say, Sebastian Scanduzzi was my DP and we had planned this to be a theatrical release. We had planned it for people to see it in the theater and it's shot cinematically, you know? But I think it also still works.
It works perfectly. I I'll be honest, perfectly honest. I watch things on a variety of ways. I watched it on my phone.
And wow.
I thought it was amazing.
And you got it. Wow. I'm happy to hear that.
No, because I think, some things just work. They work no matter what modem you see them on. If they don't work, they're not going to work, but they may be heightened in a theater, but it may not, you know, like if you end up watching it again 10 years later on TV, maybe it's like, why did I think so much of that? And maybe sometimes the theater sometimes tricks you into liking something.
That's true. That is
true. I watched Pulp Fiction for the first time in forever, and I'd seen that movie like 50 times, you know, since it came out.
Yeah.
And I watched it on my phone, and I was like, immediately brought back to the immediacy of that film. So sometimes it you change the medium up and things kind of become different. But with regards to the theater experience, it's a weird time because right now, even though people are really going back to the theaters, there are successful films out. Dramatic films are kind of getting lost in the shuffle. Ordinarily, in a year like in a typical year, something like Paul Schrader's The Card Counter or whatever would be picking up steam and going along. Instead, they kind of puttered out, and the Marvel or the Bond film, which they're great films. They're attracting mostly younger people because older people are still a little averse to going. Which is unfortunate because I sit there and I had a conversation with Joe Carnahan, the guy that did The Gray recently. And I said, I was kind of worried, because his film didn't do exactly that great at the box office. I said, well, it's kind of an older skewing film. And I said, I worried about like Ridley Scott's next two films, really. Mm-hmm. He's got two coming out and they're very adult skewing. Now in an ordinary world, like big, leads and Oscar contenders would probably get a lot of, people coming in, but it just seems like, the older crowd just is not coming in right now. So video, in a long winded way of saying it, video is your best option, honestly.
Yeah. Oh yeah, of course. I mean, and even though we had shot this film cinematically, we know that everything is mostly going to be seen at home.
Right.
That's the way that is, even in the best world,
Right.
Even in a healthy world. That's the reality.
That's where everything ends up. Yeah. Occasionally something gets a revival, but, not often,
Yeah.
It's me, Tom Skerritt. I got to see Alien a couple years ago on the big screen for Halloween. They were coming, they re-released it, and that was a treat. Right. And there's a film where ostensibly he is the lead, but not really.
Yeah, not really.
Rich,
yeah.
But what was the process of the film like? How long did it take to shoot? What were some of the, I guess, best and high and low moments?
Okay. We had 21 days for principal photography out in Eastern Washington. It was all shot on location. And we had 3 days of kind of pre-shooting because we were shooting in springtime for fall. So, I mean, the story had to take place in the fall, and believe me, I was looking for any way that we could make the story believable in spring, but you can't because nobody hunts in spring. It's just, it has to be a fall story. So we went out for 3 days and shot basic fall color, the fall of 2018, I think. Yes, the fall of 2018. And then we came back the spring of 2019 and shot up the whole film. And then we had a couple of pickup days after that. But yeah, the colorist really worked some magic, and you know, Jane Charles knew the colorist personally, and we were sending, you know, she would kept sending things like, could you do this? Could you do this? And he was always like, yeah, no problem. I mean, yeah. Colorists these days really have a lot going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about some of the high and low moments?
Well, we could start with some of the challenges. So anytime that you're working outside, you're going to be challenged. I mean, it's just the way of it, you know, and I do a lot of work with environment. If you see Lane 1974, you'll also see a lot of the environment almost as a character, but a definite presence and influence. And very important in the story. So anytime you do that, you're going to encounter some real trouble.
Yeah.
For instance, we had such high winds that the first AD shut down the set. And she said, it's not safe to shoot. So I had to, you know, jump in a car, rewrite the scene and put the whole scene inside a vehicle, which actually worked out better. You know, I think it turned out with. So these are just the challenges that you're presented with that, like, as a director, you need to be ready to roll. You know, you need to be ready to like pivot and find solutions very quickly. So there was that. It was so hot one of the days that Tom Skerritt's, you know, started to get overheated. And everybody was really hot, but he had to stay in the costume, right? Everybody else had stripped down. So the costume designer cut all the sleeves out of his costume, except for his coat, you know, just to cool him off. And, you know, we had to have ice and tent and, you know, it was blazing hot. And then it was colder than I've ever been. So, you know, out there at 4 o'clock in the morning in a rock quarry, you know, I mean, and Tom Skerritt, this is not a spoiler, Tom Skerritt is lying down on rocks for hours, you know, and we're like, oh, let's get a blanket. Let's, you know, and he was like, I'm fine. You know, he was a tough guy.
He
was pretty incredible. He was just like really physically, I mean, he was 85 years old when we were shooting.
Wow. I had no idea.
I know. You wouldn't know.
I had no idea. I had no idea he was at that age then. I thought he was maybe late 70s or something.
I know. That's how he reads. That's how he comes off. But yeah. So that was bitter cold. And you know, then we had a fight scene. I don't want to give it away. You know, brutal cold, and the sun is starting to come up, and you know, we're figuring things out. And so, you know, when you're outdoors, you're just going to experience all different kinds of things. There was one gust so furious it literally blew him over. We ran out, and he was like, oh, you know, back to one, let's go again, you know.
I can imagine. I've been out in wind sometimes, and wind has nearly knocked me over, and I gotta say, I'm a lot more, I weigh a lot more than Mr. Skerritt does.
Well, you're in the Windy City, right?
Yeah. Sometimes you can get that, but still, I'm just saying that if you know, it's not surprising, honestly. Like, you know, wind can knock me over, it can knock over pretty much anything.
Absolutely. I mean, the nature is very powerful, you know, very powerful. So, and very difficult to control.
So what was the process? I want to ask you another question, and I apologize because I had her name and I completely blanked out the
woman. I bet you're talking about Annie Gonzalez.
Yes. I feel like I had seen her in something before, but I looked up her credits and I couldn't tell for sure if I had, because I had seen some things, I was like, I wasn't conjuring anything. She was quite a revelation in the film. And totally, I would really love to see her in more things because she was just amazing. How did you come to cast her?
Well, first of all, you're going to get your wish because her career has taken off. This was her first feature film, but she's done a lot of television.
Right.
Yeah. So, coming up, she's going to be in Flamin' Hot, Eva Longoria's film.
Oh, wow.
Yes. So look forward to that. And the new season of Hentified just dropped, which she's on. I mean, there's a lot going on for her. She is incredible. But the way that I found her was, what can I say? Non-traditional. I was interested in another actor, and that actor was not available. And so I went to that actor's Instagram page and was just like, maybe they're friends, maybe something. And sure enough, Annie was there on Instagram with this friend. And the friend was saying, I love you so much. You're the best actress. You're so much fun to work with and all this. And I was like, oh, do tell.
Yeah.
And that's like the short version, because there was a lot of looking before then. But that's how I found her.
Her, right. You know?
Yeah. And so we sent a message to her agent, and she and I got on the phone on a Zoom, and the rest is history. She came out to Seattle and she was fantastic. I mean, I loved working with her so much. And I think that really comes across on the screen. I think her energy is just palpable, and she doesn't, it's no secret. She meets Tom Skerritt. But she, and he's been a cardiologist for 50 years in Seattle. She's a kind of a country veterinarian, but she's not cowed by him at all. She's just like a normal, natural person that that can show a lot of humanity without being solicitous, without being, without being weird, basically. Just like such a wonderful line that she walks, and she walks it just so perfectly and beautifully.
Her character could be somebody that sits there and tries to pull information out of his, but she doesn't. She kind of allows him the tone of the overall film is so perfect. She allows him to open up to her, basically.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting in how you handle the emergence of a relative and the end struggle to, reclaim something. I hate speaking in this way. You guys got to go see the film. I just don't want to, I don't want to ruin it for anybody, because it's a true pleasure. So you shot it in 21 days. You ended sometime before summer of 2019, I'm guessing.
That's right. Yeah, in June.
You go into editing and you get the film locked, the whole bit. And this is all before COVID, correct?
Yes, we locked the film before COVID. We locked the film January 2020.
Yeah.
We did all the ADR March 13th, I think.
Oh, so right around the time everything...
The day before shutdown in Seattle.
Yeah.
But then we still had all the rest of post to do in COVID.
Okay.
So that was not a delight, but
You were doing editing remotely?
Sound editing, yes.
Sound editing, okay.
And color and music.
And then at what point did you actually end up finishing the film completely?
That's a good question. No, I'm trying to remember because it's like this weird COVID dream.
Right. Yeah, no, I know. Did you finish
So what's that?
Did you finish it before this year?
Before 2021? That's a good question. I'm actually, I don't.
No, that's okay. That's okay. I get it. You know,
I think we finished in February of 2021. I'm just going to say that.
Okay, well, that's fine. I mean, what difference does it make at this point?
right, yeah.
So you got the film finished. At what point, what are the discussions about putting it out at that point with you and the producers and the distributor and all of that? Do you think you're waiting it out to see if you can? Or does somebody make a decision early on to just bypass, full theatrical, release? Or how does that whole conversation go?
Sure, yeah. Well, even before that, Jane Charles made the decision, had the strategy of not going to a lot of festivals. We only played, we opened in Seattle, and it was a huge hit, which was great. But of course, it's also a hometown. So you expect a warm welcome. You know, it is a film that showcases Washington State. So, but it was, hugely successful there. And then we had a couple of other requests at other film festivals like Sedona, which we honored. And that was fun, but usually film festivals play a huge role in an independent film.
Exactly. That's another issue I think that's, happening this year is that they're, despite there being some this year, they're not as effective.
They might for other films, but for us, yeah. It just didn't make that much sense. Everything seemed to be online, and her goal was to get it to a distributor quickly. Yeah. And so we went with Quiver, and Quiver has been amazing, and I really appreciate their strategy. We did a day and date release, and it's a slow rollout for the theatrical, but available everywhere online.
Yeah.
So, yeah. We've loved working with them. Yeah.
So basically the film is opening up in certain theaters as time has gone on. It just depends on where you're at, and that's as much a move for awards consideration as anything else.
Well, I'm not exactly sure if it is, but I think that if anyone deserves an award, it's Tom Skerritt. I mean, honestly, I think people really need to pay attention to this work. It's extraordinary what he's done. And it's, coming at the tail end of a huge career. So,
Right. Yeah. I think if they manage it well, they could position him in that way. So I'm hoping to see that he's in the mix.
I hope so too.
Because there's, this year it's not like last year. There's going to be more of a field. Last year was a very weird year for awards because
it was strange. Yeah,
I mean, it's just weird when Borat gets nominations. It's like, nothing against Borat, although I didn't like the second one.
Oh.
It was such a bizarre year that Borat manages to get included in major nominations. It's like, what world am I living in? It's because next to another thing released last year, the pickings
It was such a bizarre year in terms of how people, a lot of films were really held back
and what was put out there just wasn't much put out, so they had to change, everybody had to change their rules on what was accepted and what wasn't accepted because movie going wasn't what it was last year.
Although I must say I loved Nomadland and I was very
I haven't seen that one, but I know that's one that no matter how things would have gone, I sense that one would have been definitely in the mix no matter what. And
oh, yeah.
I haven't seen any of Chloe Zhao's films, but
highly recommend.
I know The Rider.
The Rider is so good. Oh,
yeah,
wow.
I know. I've heard a lot of good things. The first one I'll end up seeing is the big Marvel movie she's got coming up. Sure.
That's so funny.
I'll have to go backwards, but I've heard nothing but great things about her. So I just have to find, time to start watching certain things. And I get a little more picky as I get older with when I do have time. It's like sometimes I'll watch the same thing I've seen. I'll watch The Godfather again, for the 100th time,
Well, I mean, that's almost like comfort food.
That's exactly it. Yeah, oh, the Godfather films are my comfort food, which is a weird thing to say, I suppose, but it's true. Well, what else can you, can you talk a little bit about what led you to directing? I mean, what has your career consisted of before getting into feature films?
Yeah, well, I come from an acting background.
Yeah.
So there we go. That was, that was my life for a really long time. And theater also. I worked for years in what they call fringe theater, independent theater. Mm-hmm. Which is very, very creative and how can I say interpersonal? Like there's so many interpersonal relationships and like building this community and like all this stuff. Yeah. So that when I turned to film, the reason that I turned to film was because I love film, first of all. And, my dad taught at Sonoma State University. He used to take me when I was a little girl to see the films at the university. So it's all like these art films. And so I really kind of got the language of film at a very young age. Yeah. And then in college, I spent some time in Paris because my major was French Lit and theater. So
really?
I spent 9 months actually in Paris, and Paris can be a pretty cold city, it's not that
in what
easy
way?
To be friends, they're
being people.
Yeah. They're just, it's not quite the same. Like here, I feel like in an American city, you could meet people, you could say hi and they'd say hi, but like, it's just not the culture in Paris. So consequently, I spent a ton of time in their incredible independent theaters, and they had like all these art house theaters and then huge theaters too on the Champs-Élysées. So I spent a ton of time in theaters and soaking up all film at that time. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't until the mid 90s that I really decided to go into film. And I decided to apply to film school. And I wanted to go to one film school, USC. And when my friends heard that, they were like, oh my God, start applying now. Nobody gets in the first time, And so I kind of freaked out and I applied. And then weirdly, I was accepted. But I wasn't, like, my husband still had another year at the University of Washington. There was just all this stuff going on. And ultimately, I didn't end up going.
Wow.
So just kind of put a pin in that. And then some family stuff.
Yeah.
And in 2004, I started making my own short films and just started, going from there. So
That's cool. And then here you are. I mean.
Yeah.
Making that work that you built up with shorts and then your previous film really led to something pretty extraordinary.
I was very lucky that Lane 1974 went to South by Southwest and, got some buzz and, that stars Sophia Mitri-Schloss, and she was 12 years old at the time. She's just like a little genius. And I know that you don't like children, but
I'm telling you. I will watch the film. It depends. It's like, there's two schools of thoughts on this, and I'll use two TV shows I've watched, one almost to completion, one all the way, one I keep rewatching.
No.
I rewatched The Sopranos recently.
Oh, yeah.
The that show are written and performed, I think, perfectly. Then there was a show with Liev Schreiber called Ray Donovan.
Oh, yeah.
The kids, or even on Homeland, the first three seasons of Homeland, the kids are mega annoying, and you don't want to see anything from them. Now, maybe that's my opinion, but I think there's an extreme difference in the writing for them, and maybe in the performing. I don't want to denigrate performance. I'll denigrate a writer, no problem.
Sure, and a director. I mean, like, the director, you know, really plays a role in how children are.
Yeah.
You know,
it's a crapshoot with kids for me. It's like, you know, and if I end up liking a movie with kids in it, then that's a huge, to me, like I said, that's a huge thing, because it's not easy for me to deal. I didn't like kids much when I was a kid, so.
I hear you. I mean, we so frequently see kids just the way, I understand what you're talking about.
Yeah, there's a little bit more subtlety to what I'm saying. I don't just see a kid and instantly vomit or anything.
I mean, it's just the way, and to be fair, you know, kids have to have very short hours. They have to have teachers on set.
They're young, so they're not exactly necessarily always trained professionals. They're not going to get a Hannah Grace Moretz or somebody that's like, you know, or Jodie Foster, you know, when she was a kid, like somebody that's just naturally gifted enough to be, bam, you know, perfect right away.
Yeah.
I think of the little girl in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, the Tarantino movie. And
oh, yeah.
How, like, out of the moon, like, she was playing the same character. She was playing a character on the show in the movie, the same way that she performed on screen, which was, I don't know, it's like there's levels there that I can't really think about, quite honestly. Yeah,
she was great.
But there are people that I look at as kids, I'm like, that kid's going to be huge, you know, and it's like, that's always a great thing. Well, I don't want to take up too much more of your time, but I did want to...
Since you mentioned Ray Donovan, you know, Catherine Menig, right? And she plays his secretary, or not secretary, but like assistant.
Oh, with Stephen Bauer.
Her character starts with an L. Okay, I never should have brought this up. Anyway, she plays the mother in Lane 1974. So you will recognize.
Hold on. I'm just, we're going to do a quick IMDb search.
I was going to say you would recognize her, but you might not recognize her because she's really quite different. That film takes place in 1974 and she really looks different.
Who is it again? Catherine Morning?
Menig. It's M-O-E-N-I.
No, and she was also on The L Word.
Yes. Yeah, that's where most people know her from.
She was sort of like his, but she also was part of the business too. Yeah, she was, I always liked her a lot. In fact, one of the, you know, they that was a show, they moved things around a lot and some people laughed and I was like,
eh. Oh yeah. Well, I mean, she's great. She's
amazing. Actor. So she's in that. Okay.
Yeah.
That's great. I haven't seen The L Word, but I loved her on Ray Donovan.
Oh, well. Yeah, she's an incredible, very powerful actor. You know, not a spoiler, but she plays a mother that is not very sympathetic. Yeah. And that's a really hard for some people to take. They want every mother just to be
be the mother, yeah.
And like, I, you know, like a wonderful person. But as we all know, parents are people too, and they have their own struggles, and
I was just, I just rewatched The Sopranos, and I'm blanking on her name, the woman that played Tony Soprano's mother on there, she, that character, boy, what a what a pit of hostility and anger and resentment she was. I mean, that's the ultimate non-motherly mother. I don't, maybe Catherine beats her in Elaine, you know, I don't know if it's worth, but I'm intrigued to see now, especially now you mentioned that she's in this. What else, is there anything you're working on currently, or are you looking to work on something, or what's going on?
Yeah, actually I have 4 feature films that are on the pot, like stirring the pot,
yeah.
That I'm writing right now. So there's that.
You're writing 4.
Sorry?
You're writing 4 of them.
There's 4 projects, yes.
That okay.
I'm working on. Yeah.
Okay.
So we'll see which one rises to the top.
Yeah. Yeah. I was even talking to, it's, you know, you never know how this works. I was talking to David Duchovny recently.
Oh, yeah.
And he wrote a book that Showtime commissioned a pilot for, but even he said he doesn't know if it's going to make it, you know.
It's, I mean, like, yeah, it's a crap shoot. You just have to be prepared for anything. So
what do you do in the downtime? Do you just keep working, or do you have other things that you work on? I mean,
you know, I just keep working. I keep writing. You know, it's like, it's so weird because you go, you know, from here, it's done. Then it's back to, start all over.
Down to nowhere again. Yeah, the people that manage to have all the balls in the air and they're juggling them at once. Like somebody like, I don't know, any actor, producer, like somebody like Brad Pitt, who has
played, yeah, right.
You know, like he stars in a bunch of films that he doesn't necessarily even produce himself, but yeah. Then he's also off, his company is producing like however many damn movies. It's like,
I know, Plan B is just all over the place.
Yeah, I know he has people to work for him to sort this out, but still, I don't understand how, I mean, and just looking at my own life, it's like, I can barely deal with what I have to do in my own life. So I can't imagine the juggling that goes on. As a final question, I guess, what films, now that we're deep in the fall season, what films are you really looking forward to seeing this fall?
Oh gosh. There are so many that are coming out. I know that, well, I want to see the Todd Haynes Velvet Underground doc.
Okay.
Yeah, that's coming out. What else? I mean, I want to see the French Dispatch, yeah. Dune, of course, you know. Yeah. I'll see that in IMAX, you know. I'm one of those people that is going back.
I'm back in the theater, and I'm going to, you know, to everything. I just saw the Bond film in IMAX. And
I just saw that too. Yeah.
That was fun. That was fun. But yeah, there's a ton coming out that it's like, I'm so happy because I took from February 2020 till September of this year, I didn't go see a single, film.
Yeah. Right. Isn't that weird?
Like I would go almost every week.
We're so immersed in film, yeah. And like that is our culture. That is a thing that we do, is go to the movies. You know.
Yeah, that's part of why I know I was going crazy, is because I love going to the movies. And I go back to the movies, and I'm like, oh my god, I saw 3 movies in 1 week. I was like, you know, just gotta like finally getting back into it. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to see everything, but everything doesn't. The things I like to see, like I wanted to see the French film that won the Palme d'Or.
I saw that. Oh, you gotta see it.
It came out to the theaters by me, but it's already gone from here.
Oh, it's already gone. I saw it. I saw it 2 days ago. Here.
Yeah, it was playing near me in like multiplexes, because right now it's such a weird time. They'll put anything, I guess.
Right.
But I guess
that's a very polarizing film. Like,
yeah, no, and I know that's one I was because I knew it was going to be a one that was potentially going to throw me one way or another. I knew that.
Yeah,
everything I'd read about, I was like, I know this film's going to just do something to me,
mm-hmm.
and which yeah. I appreciate that. I'd rather be shook up. I'd rather be offended, honestly, than be. You know, it was okay.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
I hate in it was okay.
yeah no, that's something a filmmaker never wants to hear.
yeah I know some people just like it's okay to watch, but Me, I need more than that. So
yeah, for sure. And this will definitely give you more than that. Yeah, I promise you.
And go ahead.
It just was announced that it's going to be the French submission for the Oscar.
Right. Yeah. So I might still have a chance to see. I'll kind of widen my search, but I live right near the Indiana border outside of Chicago, and it was playing in Indiana. I was like, oh my God, can't believe, I don't want to say the wrong word, but I can't believe Indianans actually might go see this. And that might be why it's not playing there anymore. Well, let me wrap up by saying a film you need to see is East of the Mountains.
Absolutely.
Starring Tom Skerritt, directed by S.J. Shiro. And it's an amazing film. You could get it, Vudu, Apple, Amazon, wherever.
Redbox.
Redbox. You could probably get it off of like your cable.
Your cable. Yes, absolutely. It's very easy to find. I really do hope that everybody sees it, if only for Tom's performance. But there's a lot more, as you mentioned, Mira Sorvino and Annie Gonzalez and so many other things. There's a lot to see, but Tom's performance is really...
really one of those truly special films that seemingly come out of nowhere. And if I hadn't, I think you guys were written up in the Hollywood Reporter, maybe.
We were, and the New York Times. I mean,
it was probably Hollywood Reporter where I saw it, because I read the Times too, but I didn't see that, I know for sure. Mm-hmm. And if I'm not out constantly scouring for, I'm constantly scouring for new stuff that's coming out or whatever to talk to people and I know we had a lengthy in between starting to talk about doing this interview. So I appreciate you putting the time in and taking the time today to talk. It was truly a pleasure.
Well, 100% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes. Just want to say that too.
Wow. Look at that. That's even bigger. Yeah. Now, hey, go out tonight. You got to see it tonight. East of the Mountains. Go see it however you can. And if it comes to a theater near you, then go see it there too. And
for sure.
If you're a member of any award thing, nominate it.
Please. I think I'm begging you. Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. And it's great to talk to you, Brett. Thanks for inviting me.
Hopefully we'll get a chance to talk again.
I would love that.
All right. You have a great rest of your day.
Thank you. You too. All right,
bye.
All right. Bye.